On September 13th, 1881, in room 13 of Manhattan's Knickerbocker Cottage, 12 expectant men sat around a table. Their meal was all set out, big platters of lobster salad, each of which had been molded into the shape of a coffin and was surrounded by 13 crawfish. Exactly 13 candles lit the room, not quite fully illuminating the enormous banner which had been hung that read, Nos mortituri te salutamus, Latin for, We who are about to die salute you. All they needed to officially start their evening was one more man. But the expected 13th guest was running late, and when an hour or so had passed and the last guest still hadn't shown himself, the dinner's host, William Fowler, decided that nothing was going to get in the way of his new club's inaugural dinner. So he volunteered a nearby waiter to join them, so that the table would be seating exactly 13 men, as Fowler had originally intended. Thankfully, the late invitee arrived just before Fowler was about to put the terrified waiter through some initiation rites, so he could be an official member of the club being founded. The probably grateful waiter was released back to his duties, and the first of 13 toasts for the evening was made. So began the first meeting of the 13 Club. William Fowler was obviously not a superstitious man. He was the opposite. Having observed several instances in his life of the number 13 not bringing any bad luck whatsoever, and having a delightful sense of humor that I probably would have enjoyed if our paths had crossed, he decided to combat the superstitious nature of his times by forming the 13 Club, a social club which would celebrate and flout everything that was supposedly unlucky, black cats, references to death and the macabre, and of course, the number 13. In Fowler's time, fear of the number 13 was most often associated with the Last Supper, where Jesus dined with his 12 disciples shortly before he was crucified. As one superstitious person explained in 1863, since the Last Supper, whenever there are 13 persons assembled, one of them is sure to be a Judas. This belief was common enough to interrupt social occasions, to the point where in some places, one could hire a last-minute 14th guest simply to avoid having an unlucky 13 at their dinner party. Fowler's dinner parties would never make use of such a service. 13 was the correct number of guests at his table. Menus generally numbered 13 courses, and wine lists were often shaped like gravestones. Members of the 13 Club came dressed in black suits, neckties, and top hats, and before sitting down, they made a point of walking under a ladder, which was brought indoors specifically for the occasion. The atmosphere was funereal and suggested a feast at which undertakers only were bidden, the New York Times wrote of April 1882's meeting, which featured a cake with a black cat on it. Other meetings included mirror smashing, salt spilling, and mock trials of members who had purportedly acted superstitiously. I don't know about you, but I would have loved to be a member of the 13 Club. Really sounds like my kind of crowd. I probably wouldn't have been allowed to join on account of my womanly shape, but I'll try to set that aside for now and imagine the morbid delight of one of Fowler's evenings. Surrounded by omens of death and bad luck, but complete with 13 courses of deliciousness and wine ordered from a gravestone-shaped menu. I'd even step under the ladder and pet a black cat in my lap all night, because I, like William Fowler, scoff in the face of superstition. And there are few superstitions as widespread and well-known as the one which gave Fowler's club its name, that only bad luck could follow such a blatant celebration of the number 13. Welcome, my little creeplings. Gather round. It's time for Creeptastic. I'm your host, Caroline, Countess of Creep if you're nasty. And for the 13th episode of Creeptastic, it made entirely too much sense to me to look at one of the most well-known and widespread superstitions out there, that the number 13 is unlucky, maybe even cursed. Why is this number, and it is just a number, apparently not like any other, and not just in America, but several countries around the world? Why do some people claim it's actually a lucky number, while others consider it so unlucky, they won't stay in room 13 or on the 13th floor. Don't even talk about the 13th room of the 13th floor. How has this irrational superstition permeated our everyday lives and affected everything from how we number floors in a building to how many people we'll invite over to dinner? Is Friday the 13th really one of the worst days to be out and about? Because somehow it's even unluckier than 13 is. I am going to answer all these questions for you, give you some random facts about the number 13 you may or may not already know, and of course, I'll read you a little bedtime story about a 13th child whose siblings want to get rid of him. Why spend a whole episode talking about what is, in fact, just a number? Because a shockingly high number of people are so superstitious about that number that they will arrange their lives to avoid it at all costs. And anything that has that kind of effect on so many has to be creeptastic. Let's get to it. We always start with the what on this show, no exceptions for today. Although, if you really need to be told what the number 13 is, I am quite terrified for your prospects in life. Because it means you can't count very high. You might want to brush up on that. But fundamentals are important, so in case you forgot, 13 is the natural number, natural meaning a standard number used for counting, which comes after 12, but before 14. I know the math is already getting complicated. Stick with me. It's a prime number, divisible only by itself and 1. And it's not just a prime, but also the smallest emirp, which I learned is a prime that is a different prime when its digits are reversed. So 13 prime, 31 prime. It's also a number in the famed Fibonacci sequence, which finds the next number by adding the two prior to it. And despite its often dark reputation, 13 is in fact a happy number. And that's not my commentary on the emotional state of a number. That is actually a term which exists in number theory. According to number theory, a happy number is a number which eventually reaches 1 when it is replaced by the sum of the square of each of its digits. Don't worry, I'm gonna walk you through that. If we square each digit in 13, so 1 squared and 3 squared, we get a 1 and a 9. 1 and 9 add up to 10. We do the same process again, square 1 and 0, and those add up to 1. Apparently, if you can do this process with a number and get it to 1, that means the number is happy, fulfilled in its life, I suppose. It also means that if a number can't be happy, it must be sad or unhappy. Those are actual terms used in number theory, which makes the whole thing sound a little bit farcical to me. But I'm not really a math person these days. I stopped being into math at some point in high school, so I will let others play with their happy numbers and their primes and whatnot, and I'll try to learn what I can from them. Where else do we see 13 in the world? Other than pretty much everywhere, because it is a stupidly common number, like all the ones around it. Let's look at just some examples of where it shows up, just to make the point that it is fucking everywhere. One place is in various religions around the world. In Shia Islam, 13 signifies the 13th day of the month of Rajab, which is the 7th month of the Islamic calendar and considered a sacred month. This date reflects the birth of Imam Ali, cousin and son-in-law to the Prophet Muhammad. In Catholicism, the apparitions of the Virgin of Fatima in 1917 were claimed to occur on the 13th day of 6 consecutive months. The number 13 is also associated with Saint Anthony of Padua, since his feast day falls on June 13th. A traditional devotion called the 13 Tuesdays of Saint Anthony involves praying to the saint every Tuesday over a period of 13 weeks. Another devotion, St. Anthony's Chaplet, consists of 13 Our Father, Hail Mary, and Glory Be prayers in honor of the 13 favors mentioned in the Miraculous Responsory, a prayer in honor of St. Anthony, which was composed by St. Bonaventure. In Judaism, 13 signifies the age at which a boy or girl matures and becomes a bar or bat mitzvah, or full member of the Jewish faith. 13 is also the number of principles of Jewish faith, according to Maimonides, an influential scholar of the Torah in the Middle Ages. And according to rabbinic commentary on the Torah, God has 13 attributes of mercy. In Aztec mythology, there are 13 heavens which were formed by the gods during creation. Alright, so 13 can't be so bad that it couldn't be included in some of our major religions. Where else does 13 show up in our daily lives? Hint. Everywhere. In the standard 52-card deck of playing cards, there are 4 suits which each have 13 ranks. A baker's dozen, long dozen, or long measure, is 13, one more than a standard dozen. The 13th loaf is called the Vantage Loaf because it is considered advantageous overall to get 13 loaves for the price of 12. It is. And if you've ever bought a dozen donuts only to discover a magical 13th in the box, you know just how good that 13th treat can be. Tai Chi has 13 postures, consisting of 8 gates and 5 steps, which are considered to be of fundamental importance to the practice of Tai Chi. In astronomy, there are 13 star constellations in the zodiac, as opposed to astrology, which recognizes only 12 signs of the zodiac. In the sport rugby league, each side has 13 players on the field at any given time, and the jersey number 13 is worn by the starting loose forward or lock forward in most competitions. In rugby union, which I learned is apparently different from rugby league, the jersey number 13 is worn by the outside center. In petanque, a bowls-type game similar to bocce ball, standard games are won when a team reaches the score of 13 points. And here's a cute little bonus fact for this game. A final score of 13-0 is called fanny. That's right, fanny. As we saw in the Jewish faith, 13 also seems to be an age that a lot of people have decided some kind of change in maturity level has taken place. On many social media platforms in the US, 13 is the standard minimum age to be allowed to create an account, if you're going to comply with all applicable laws. 13 is also the age which the Entertainment Software Rating Board, or ESRB, assesses for T-rated games, T being for teen. And the Motion Picture Association of America, the dreaded MPAA, recommends movies with a PG-13 rating. I personally don't recall 13 as being an age of any particular maturity for myself. I was in the throes of puberty at the time, and it was driving me fucking nuts. I was an irrational, emotional monster. But, alright, I'll go with mature too if you want to say so. And finally, despite the fact that literally millions of Americans would profess at least some discomfort with the number 13, if not outright terror, the number is littered through our history and heraldry. As you may recall, the United States of America was created from 13 British colonies, and therefore, the number 13 is a commonly recurring motif. Where can you find it? First flag of the United States had 13 stripes as well as 13 white stars in the Blue Union. The 13 stripes represented the 13 colonies, and the 13 stars represented the number of states in the new nation of America. When 2 new states were added to the Union in 1795, the flag was changed to have 15 stars and 15 stripes. But you can do the math on that pretty quick. You can't keep changing the flag every time you add a damn state, not the way things were going then. So with the addition of 5 new states in 1818, the number of stripes was reset and permanently fixed at 13. The Great Seal of the United States has tons of imagery reflecting the number 13. On the seals observe, the overhead glory has 13 stars. The chest shield in front of the spread eagle has 13 stripes, 7 white, 6 red. In the eagle's right talon, it holds the olive branch of peace, which has 13 olives and 13 olive leaves. In the eagle's left talon, it holds the weapons of war, which consists of 13 arrows. And last, but of course not least, on the seal's reverse, the unfinished pyramid consists of 13 levels. Yeah, we Americans were super stoked on the number 13 when we became our own nation. 13's for all. All those examples could probably be interpreted as either positive or negative, simply depending on the perspective of the person you're talking to. But the fact is that they are, in fact, facts. We had 13 colonies. They became 13 states. Them's the facts. But of course, the story of the number 13 does not end there. Because for whatever reason, there have been, and might forever be, people who have decided that 13 is either lucky or very, very unlucky. Let's look at the lucky folk first. In France, prior to the First World War, 13 was considered a lucky number and was used in numerical form as a good luck symbol on postcards and charms. In Italy, 13 was the lucky number in the Italian football pools, or betting pools, known as Totocalcio. The Italian expression fare tredici, literally make 13, is essentially the equivalent of hitting the jackpot in English. Colgate University in our very own United States also considers 13 a lucky number and isn't afraid to celebrate it. They were founded in 1819 by 13 men with $13, 13 prayers, and 13 articles. That is a lot of 13s. And to this day, members of the Colgate community consider the number 13 a good omen. In fact, the campus address is 13 Oak Drive in Hamilton, New York, and their male a cappella group is called the Colgate 13. So 13 doesn't always get a bad rep, but the number of people who think of it as unlucky definitely seems to outstrip the number who think more positively of the number 13. In fact, some people take this superstition to such an intense place that it can rise to the level of a phobia, which of course means it has to have its own fancy Latin-based name. Triskaidekaphobia, from the ancient Greek triskaideka, 13, and phobos, fear, refers to a fear or very strong superstition about the number 13. The term was used as early as 1910 by Isidore Coriat in the book Abnormal Psychology. Superstitious sufferers of triskaidekaphobia believe the number 13 to be so unlucky that they will try to avoid anything numbered or even labeled 13. Could there possibly be any rational basis for doing so? Well, here's some examples that people have used as so-called proof of just how unlucky 13 is. What such people conveniently ignore are all the instances of the number 13 appearing without the world falling apart, instead choosing to cling to the few times it might have coincided with some bad shit going down. We've all heard of a little NASA mission called Apollo 13, right? It launched on April 11th, 1970, at 13:13 Central Standard Time, and then suffered an oxygen tank explosion on April 13th at 21:07:53 Central Standard Time. And surely that's too many 13s. But as you probably also recall, Apollo 13 returned safely to Earth on April 17th. So how bad of luck is that really, if everyone made it home in one piece? Plenty of astronauts on other missions didn't make it home, and 13 was nowhere in sight. Nevertheless, rumors persist that the disaster that occurred on Apollo 13 may have been a factor that led to a renaming that prevented a mission called STS-13, or the 13th Space Shuttle Flight. STS-41G would end up being the name of the 13th Space Shuttle Flight. However, if you dig into how NASA set up and changed their numbering systems for missions, this rumor does not hold up. The mission that would have been called STS-13 was, in fact, the 11th launch of the space shuttle because of various other factors like mission cancellations. And in the case of the actual 13th flight of the space shuttle, the crew, who was not superstitious at all, made a cute little mission patch that had a black cat on it, which I included in the Instagram for this episode. That mission also happened to re-enter Earth's atmosphere and land without incident on none other than Friday the 13th, which one crew member described as being pretty cool. I agree. Another assertion which has been made about the unluckiness of number 13, and Friday the 13th in particular, is that the superstition is based on the fact that on Friday, October 13th, 1307, the arrest of the Knights Templar was ordered by Philip IV of France. However, you should not believe things you read in the Da Vinci Code, which is actually where this false assertion comes from. Damn it, Dan Brown, stop fucking up people's knowledge of history. There was a Friday the 13th mini crash in the stock market that occurred on Friday, October 13th, 1989. But it was a mini, definitely nothing so dire as the crash of 1929 or even 2008. But there you go. Southwest Airlines Flight 1380 suffered an uncontained engine failure due to the failure of the number 13 fan blade on the number 1 engine on April 17th, 2018, and a passenger who was partially sucked out of a window as a result of damage later died from her injuries. And that is truly awful. But saying the number 13 had anything to do with it is truly ridiculous to me. The only 13 which was even in all that info is that it was a number 13 fan blade, which happened to fail. And I'm sorry, you're just not going to convince me that had anything to do with the actual number 13. Sometimes shit really does just happen, you know? But here's the thing about this superstition that truly boggles my mind. There are so many people who believe it, that a lot of companies, manufacturers, and organizations use another way of numbering or labeling to avoid the number 13, with hotels and tall buildings being insanely conspicuous examples of people bending to the idea that labeling a button in an elevator as 13 will have dire consequences. Here's some more examples. In triathlons, the number 13 is not used. The numbering goes 11, 12, 14, 15. Vehicle registration plates in Ireland are such that the first two digits represent the year of registration of the vehicle. So 11 is a 2011 registered car, 12 is 2012, and so on. So 2013 should have had plates which started with 13, right? Wrong! In 2012, there were concerns among members of the Society of the Irish Motor Industry that the prospect of having quote-unquote 13 registered vehicles might discourage motorists from buying new cars because of superstition surrounding the number 13. And they were worried that car sales and the motor industry, which was failing at that time, would suffer further as a result. And wouldn't you know it, the Irish government introduced a new system in 2013. Whereby the vehicles registered that year would have the age identifier on their registration plates read 131 for vehicles registered in the first 6 months of 2013, and 132 for those registered in the latter 6 months of the year. They claim they had other reasons for making the change, but no one denies that one of them was literally just superstition. The number 13 was not used in the Indianapolis 500 from 1915 to 2002, and was not even permitted for use between 1926 and 2002, even if you wanted it. However, you should know that in 2009, E.J. Viso, driving for HVM Racing in the 2009 IndyCar Series season, drove a green number 13 car, full-time, despite all those terrible superstitions about it in motorsports. And the proof is in the pudding, people. I have confirmed that as of this recording, he is still alive and well. The 13 on his car didn't kill him or anyone else. In 2007, a new airline called Brussels Airlines began their operations. but soon found they had a problem when they began receiving complaints from superstitious passengers. Why? Because their logo had 13 dots, which made up a stylized letter B. And, quote, they said they were not pleased with an aircraft with a logo with 13 balls because they think it brings them bad luck, said a company spokesperson. The complaints were so numerous and conveyed so strongly that Brussels Airlines altered their logo design to incorporate just one additional dot. And as the company spokesperson said, we are never surprised by reactions, but that it was that bad, it really took us aback. I am quite taken aback as well, Brussels Airlines. And I feel bad about the money it probably cost you to do all that last-minute logo changing. But if the customer is always right... uh-oh. The rich and powerful are not immune to superstition. Both Herbert Hoover and Franklin Roosevelt were known for doing their best to never attend dinner parties which had 13 guests. That's right. The man who led America through two of the greatest challenges our country has faced, the Great Depression and World War II. The man who was famously quoted as saying, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," had a little triskaidekaphobia going on. This fear of having 13 at a table extended to other countries. As I shared in our opening story, in France, 14th guests could be hired at the spur of the moment to round out otherwise numerically ill-fated meals. I want that job. Getting paid to just show up at a fancy dinner so no one has to worry about the dire consequences of seating exactly 13 people? Easiest gig ever! And the food is probably really good. And as if to prove that even the macabre and morbid among us can suffer from superstition, none other than the titan of horror himself, Stephen King, skips the 13th step on staircases and gets anxious watching Channel 13. When he reads books, he makes a point not to pause on pages in which the digits either are or add up to 13, like page 94. As King wrote about his phobia in 1984, it's neurotic, sure, but it's also safer. If you say so, Stephen, if you say so. You said neurotic, not me. But then there is the most widespread and visible practice which can be seen worldwide, which is to deny, via labeling, that there is a 13th floor in a building. Some companies take it even further, ensuring rooms aren't labeled as being 13. This is one that truly has never made any fucking sense to me, because relabeling something doesn't just make it so. If you build a building which has 13 stories but put the number 14 on that elevator button, you haven't changed the fucking layout of the building. It's not like the 13th story just magically disappears when you do that. If I take a label gun and put a label on my forehead that says tree, I'm not going to start sprouting branches. It is 100% a purely psychological effect. And it astonishes me that it is so widespread. Omitting the 13th floor comes in a variety of forms, the most common including denoting what would otherwise be the 13th floor as level 14, or giving the 13th floor an alternate designation such as 12A or M, because M is the 13th letter of the Latin alphabet. Or some folks simply close their 13th floor to public occupancy or access, such as by designating it as a mechanical floor. Just how common is this practice? In 2002, based on an internal review of records, Dilip Rangnekar of Otis Elevators, which is one of the top manufacturers of elevators, estimated that 85% of the buildings with Otis brand elevators did not have a floor named the 13th floor. Early tall building designers, fearing a fire on the 13th floor, or fearing tenants' superstitions about the rumor, decided to omit having a 13th floor listed on their elevator numbering. And elevator manufacturers like Otis decided to offer this option to all their clients. And so the practice became commonplace, and eventually found its way into American mainstream culture and building design. As of 2013, in New York City, less than 5% of residential condo buildings in Manhattan and Brooklyn had a 13th floor. Are there really that many people who have this kind of issue? Apparently, yeah. It might be the building's owner or builder that has a little triskaidekaphobia going on, but what is much more likely is that the building owner or landlord wants to avoid any problems or loss of revenue that might occur because of superstitious tenants, occupants, or customers. I'm not particularly superstitious myself, but not having a 13th floor is a no-brainer, said building developer Isaac Senbahar. You don't want to preclude anyone, like a buyer who happens to be superstitious. It boils down to that. And I get it. What does it cost you to do this little relabel in the grand scheme of things? Nothing. So it becomes a better safe than sorry kind of thing, justified by a mentality that the rewards for skipping the 13th floor will be higher than any negative repercussions for it. So why not? Other than superstition being bullshit, in my own humble opinion, I will tell you one practical reason why not. And thankfully, some people out there agree with me. Vancouver city planners have banned the practice of skipping 13s in their city because it could lead to mistakes by first responders who might go to the wrong floor. This makes very good practical sense to me. I am glad that there are still some bastions of reason out there. But at this point, the issue of the 13th floor has become a social convention we might never get away from because we just keep perpetuating it. As sociologist Otto Neurath put in a paper all the way back in 1939, the superstition of not installing a 13th floor is comparable to the use of money in an economy. It is simply something we have all agreed will be an accepted standard or norm. Which means it's probably not going anywhere anytime soon, much as that drives my logical ordered brain insane. Skipping the 13th floor is so widespread that it really begs the question if doing it for the customers is a legitimate reason for the practice. And from what I could tell, from a business perspective, yes, unfortunately it is. In a 2007 Gallup poll, 13% of American adults reported that they would be bothered if given a hotel room on the 13th floor, while 9% indicated that they would be sufficiently bothered to request a room on a different floor. Let's think about that for a second. As of the 2020 U.S. Census, the U.S. population was 329.5 million people. So if we just apply those raw percentages, we are talking about almost 43 million people who would be bothered if they were stationed on the 13th floor of a building, and almost 30 million people who would ask to go anywhere else in the building, just please, not the 13th floor. That is banoodles to me, that many of us crazy humans can be that irrational about something like the labeling in a fucking elevator. Good God, it's madness. And of course, there are some people that take the 13th floor situation to an even scarier place, suggesting that the 13th floor, particularly in government buildings, is not really missing, but actually contains top secret governmental departments. Or more generally, they just say that it's proof of something sinister or clandestine going on. Holy shit, that must be where all the Illuminati hang out. And that is an idea which has truly run wild and inspired quite a few sketchy 13th floor concepts in pop culture. For example, the 13th floor is where the top secret research and development division resides in the fifth book of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. The Superman story in Action Comics number 448 from June of 1975 featured a secret 13th floor used to teleport alien tourists from another planet so they could visit Earth. The Night of Owls storyline in Batman features the 13th floors of Gotham's buildings being used as bases by the assassins of a secret society that has ruled Gotham for generations. And here's a fun one I really like. In the Marvel Comics event storyline Iron Man 2020, an army of rebel robots and artificial intelligences have a safe haven in the form of an extra-dimensional plane of existence made of solid light, called the 13th floor, which can be reached through any elevator in Manhattan, and access to it manifests in the form of a button for the 13th floor that only cyber beings can see. If I'm being honest, The 13th floor sounds like where all the cool kids hang out. I think we should go. What about the housing market? Do we see the same kind of shenanigans there? Do people care that much if they're trying to find a place to live full-time? Sort of. Research on 13th floor effects on real estate values presents a mixed picture. Several prominent American real estate developers have claimed that they are unaware of any reduction in the value of 13th floor offices or apartments. On the other hand, in a study conducted in Russia, it was found that 13th floor apartments were less likely to sell than were apartments on 12 or 14. This effect was eliminated, however, if developers offered buyers a 10% or larger discount on the cost of 13th floor apartments. We humans do love a deal, no matter what superstitions we might have. An article I found in BBC News magazine claimed houses marked as 13 were harder to move in the UK. The problem is apparently so great that some local authorities in the UK have banned the use of number 13 in all new property developments. Well, of course, others are determined to hold out against giving such an official blessing for what is nothing more than ancient superstition. The District Council of Wyre Forest has in recent years banned the use of number 13 in all new developments. And their local councillor, Stephen Clee, has resolutely defended that policy, saying, "We have to listen to what the people say. The local community were saying to us, we don't like living at number 13, so can we do something about it?" I wonder if that was a lot of people, or just a few really loud people. I'm thinking just a few really loud people. But rationality can prevail. West Norfolk Council's policy on street numbering states simply that there should be no sanction given to the avoidance of any numbers, for example, 13. And in Edinburgh, the city council upholds the strictest traditions of Scottish Enlightenment by stating severely, "In all instances, the number 13 is never omitted." I am glad that some folks are still fighting the superstitious powers that be. Use your brains, folks. Use your brains. But this article also echoed what the Russian study did, that people care about living at number 13 or on the 13th floor unless you knock the price of doing so down enough. So superstition can be overlooked if we get a discount which makes it worth our while, because deep down, we know it's bullshit. So now the big question. Why, oh why, has our poor little 13 been singled out as the bad guy? Where did this superstition come from? The short answer is that no one knows, but we will look at the theories anyway. We've already talked a little bit about the Jesus Christ Last Supper theory. At the Last Supper, there were 13 people around the table, counting Jesus Christ and the 12 apostles. Some believe this is unlucky because one of those 13, Judas Iscariot, was the betrayer of Jesus. And Christianity being as widespread as it is, it makes sense how this could have expanded into a worldwide superstition. But there's other theories, like the Norse mythology theory. According to folklore historian Donald Dawsey, the unlucky nature of the number 13 originated with a Norse myth about 12 gods having a dinner party in Valhalla. The trickster god Loki, who was not invited, arrived as the 13th guest, and arranged for Hur to shoot Baldur with a mistletoe-tipped arrow. As Dawsey put it, "Baldur died, and the whole earth got dark. The whole earth mourned. It was a bad, unlucky day." And so the theory goes that this major event in Norse mythology caused the number 13 to be considered unlucky. The next reason is also related to religion, specifically how the monks in charge of the calendars contended with the years, which had 13 full moons instead of 12. Didn't happen often, but when it did, it annoyed the fuck out of them, because it would upset the regular arrangement of church festivals, which are just a pain in the ass to manage, I guess. And so, supposedly, 13 came to be considered an unlucky number, essentially because it represented a problem which had to be dealt with. And who wants another problem added to their workday, am I right? Another theory, related to the lunar and solar calendars, which do not match up perfectly, states that as the solar calendar triumphed over the lunar in societies around the world, the number 13 became unlucky and seen as cursed simply because people favored the solar calendar more. This theory also explains why negative feelings about 13 are found in so many cultures around the world, because they were cultures formerly employing lunar calendars. And there are approximately 12.41 lunations per solar year. So there would be 12 quote-unquote true months, plus a smaller, and often portentous, 13th month. There's a myth floating around that the earliest reference to 13 being unlucky or evil is in the Babylonian Code of Hammurabi, circa 1780 BC, where the 13th law has been said to be omitted. However, this has been proven as bullshit, as the original Code of Hammurabi has no numeration. This myth actually comes from the fact that the translation of the code by L.W. King in 1910 omitted one article. But other translations of the Code of Hammurabi, for example, the translation by Robert Francis Harper, include the 13th article. 'Twas just a mistake. Then there's the Mayan calendar shenanigans. The ancient Mayan calendar is made up of 13 baktuns, consisting of 20 katun cycles each. And the end of the Mayan calendar's 13th baktun, which was scheduled for the year we know as 2012, has previously been interpreted as the end of the world. So if the last baktun is the 13th, then 13 must be bad. As we all know, however, 2012 has come and gone without an apocalypse, so this one really doesn't hold water anymore. For whatever reason, among many cultures, it just seems to be that the number 12 emerged throughout history as a quote-unquote complete number. There are 12 months in a year, 12 signs of the zodiac, 12 gods of Olympus, 12 sons of Odin, 12 labors of Heracles, 12 Hindu shrines where Shiva is worshipped, 12 successors of Muhammad in Shia Islam, and 12 tribes of Israel. In Christianity, Jesus was betrayed by one of his 12 apostles, who happened to be the 13th guest to arrive for the Last Supper. So surpassing the number 12 ostensibly unbalances the ideal nature of things, because it is seen as irregular and disrespectful of a sense of perfection. The number 13 bears the stigma of misfortune and bad luck we all know today. My favorite theory is the simplest and most straightforward. People just like a scapegoat when life doesn't go their way. As psychologist Stanley Krippner put it, people are hardwired to find meaning in various patterns, connections, and perceptions. They need someone or something to blame when stuff goes wrong, and numbers are an easy target. Yep, and once enough people have decided a certain number is the best target, it's hard to dislodge that from the masses. So it just keeps going. We may never know exactly why 13 is considered unlucky. It simply is. And because we keep reinforcing it by continuing to change numbers in buildings and shit like that, it will probably always be considered unlucky. Equally unknown to us today is why adding a particular day of the week into the mix seems to fuck things up even more. I am speaking, of course, about Friday the 13th. This superstitious fear is so prevalent that it has its own insanely long Latin name, which I am not even going to attempt to pronounce. Feel free to look it up. You won't want to pronounce it either. We didn't really do ourselves any favors in deciding that Friday the 13th was a bad day, because the fact is that Friday happens to be the most common weekday on which the 13th of a month can occur in the Gregorian calendar we use now. In fact, in any given year, we are guaranteed to have at least one, but maybe as many as three, Friday the 13ths. The association of bad luck with Friday seems to have first appeared in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales in the late 14th century. Quote, "And on Friday fell all this misfortune." But references to Friday as a day associated with ill luck in general first appear around the middle of the 17th century. In particular, it appeared in numerous publications as a particularly unlucky day to start a new venture, beginning a journey, giving birth, getting married, moving, starting a new job, etc. Why Friday, when there are 7 days of the week to choose from? The fact is, it might be down to religion again. As we've established, 13 is associated with the number of people at the Last Supper, and the crucifixion took place on a Friday, thus leading to an association of bad luck with the combination of that number and that day. In England, the sixth day of the week, Friday, was once reserved for public executions. It was called Hangman's Day, and that tradition bled over to America, which also had a tradition of holding all executions on Fridays in the 19th century. And so, Friday the 13th became the unluckiest of days simply because it combined two distinct and apparently powerful superstitions into one. Superstition about Friday the 13th might be one of the most widespread superstitions in the United States, possibly affecting tens of millions of Americans. A study by Scanlon et al. In 1993, which was published in the British Medical Journal, analyzed the relation between health, behavior, and superstition surrounding Friday the 13th in the United Kingdom by comparing the ratio of traffic volume to traffic accidents on Friday the 6th and Friday the 13th over a period of several years. What they found was that, quote, "The risk of hospital admission as a result of a transport accident may be increased by as much as 52% on Friday the 13th. Staying home is recommended." And while there does not appear to be hard evidence to support the claim, it has been suggested that $800 to $900 million are lost every Friday the 13th as a result of people avoiding travel, wedding plans, moving, all that. Henry Ford, for example, declined to do business on a Friday the 13th. And losing that much money over one down day isn't actually as crazy as it might have sounded to me before COVID, because we've seen how enough people halting business can be really fucking devastating. But is Friday the 13th actually unlucky? That Scanlon study I mentioned notwithstanding, it largely seems like bullshit. Little, if any, studies are out there showing a correlation between things like increased accidents or injuries and Friday the 13th. And even when they do, like the Scanlon study, can we really say it's because the day itself is unlucky? Or is it just that people's irrational fears of it make them more likely to fuck things up via self-fulfilling prophecy? I'm inclined to think the latter. Sometimes thinking something can definitely make it so. Belief is powerful. Thankfully, most people seem to agree with me that it seems a bit ridiculous to change your behavior at all on a Friday the 13th because it might be unlucky. Previous YouGov research finds that most Americans don't believe that Friday the 13th is an unlucky day, with about 52% saying it's definitely not unlucky, while 28% believe it's probably not unlucky. However, a whopping 11% of people do believe that it's definitely or probably an unlucky day. And that is the equivalent of over 36 million people. Here's a fun little gender difference factoid I stumbled across. Men are about twice as likely as women to believe that Friday the 13th is unlucky. They're also more likely to consider themselves superstitious overall. 16% of men say they're very superstitious, compared with just 2% of women who say the same. Interesting. All of this irrationality really just makes me wonder, why the hell do we humans get superstitious about anything? What purpose does it serve? According to psychologists, people tend to attribute events to supernatural causes, in psychological jargon what they call external causes, most often under one or both of the following circumstances. The first is that people are more likely to attribute an event to a superstitious cause if it is more unlikely than it is likely. In other words, the more surprising the event, the more likely it is to evoke a supernatural explanation. This is believed to stem from an effectance motivation, or a basic desire to exert control over one's environment. When no natural cause can explain a situation, attributing an event to a superstitious cause might give people some sense of control and feeling like they have the ability to predict what will happen in their environment. That makes people feel better about life in general. People are also more likely to attribute an event to a superstitious cause if it is negative rather than positive. This is called negative agency bias. And here's a perfect example of it. Boston Red Sox fans attributed the failure of their team to win the World Series for 86 years to the curse of the Bambino, which was supposedly a curse placed on the team for trading Babe Ruth to the New York Yankees so that the team owner could fund a Broadway musical. When the Red Sox finally won the World Series in 2004, the team's success was attributed to the team's skill and the rebuilding effort of the new owner and general manager. Psychologist Stuart Weiss has pointed out that until about 2010, quote, most researchers assumed superstitions were irrational and focused their attentions on discovering why people were superstitious. Weiss went on to describe studies that looked at the relationship between performance and superstitious rituals. Preliminary work has indicated that such rituals can reduce stress and thereby improve performance. But as Weiss has said, not because they are superstitious, but because they are rituals. So there is no real magic, but there is a bit of calming magic in performing a ritualistic sequence before attempting a high-pressure activity. But any old ritual will do. The reality is, people will always be drawn to superstition, because there will always be things that happen in our lives that we either can't explain or don't want to explain with natural causes, and we like to feel we have control over our lives somehow. What form any particular superstition takes is purely a function of whatever historical and cultural factors are in play. Here's a couple of examples of how it's not the number 13, or the black cat, or the day of the week itself, which is the problem. It's our minds. New buildings in some parts of China avoid the 4th, 14th, 24th, and so on floors because the word four sounds like death in Mandarin, which is the predominant language for the country. In South Korea, however, buildings tend to include the fourth floor, in spite of similar pronunciation issues in the Korean language. Though some newer buildings have been seen to substitute the letter F in the place of the number 4. In the Spanish-speaking world, 13 is still considered unlucky, but it is not Fridays, but Tuesdays that are the worst day to be the 13th of a month. In Spanish, the name for the second day following the Christian Sabbath is Martes. Mars Day. And around this deity, most commonly known as the Roman god of war, the equivalent of the Greek god Ares, spin a web of negative qualities. Aggression, duplicity, hostility, selfishness. Reputedly despised by both his parents, Zeus and Hera, Mars could be worshipped for his valor and power, but perhaps more often, he was feared. And herein lies at least part of the reason why Tuesday has such low stock in the Hispanic Latin American culture. In fact, there is a folk saying which reflects this. Día martes no te cases ni te embarques. On Tuesday, marry not, nor set sail. So has the number 13 crept into the wide world of horror that we all know and love? Of course it has. Let's look at the number 13 in some popular horror fiction. What I noticed in researching this was that many of the films and TV shows which really focus on 13 as being important somehow tend to veer more towards the sci-fi, supernatural kind of vibe, less overt horror. So I'm going to focus most on the more horror-driven media. All the way back in 1948, there was a movie that came out called 13 Lead Soldiers. And is referred to more as a mystery rather than horror, but honestly, sounds pretty creeptastic to me. Murders are occurring, as well as thefts of little toy soldiers which date back 900 years, the complete set of which has 13 in total. And those 13 lead soldiers are part of an elaborate cipher which will lead to the treasure of an old Viking king. And greed can make people do awful, awful things. There will be more deaths before the treasure hunt is over. 13 ghosts might sound familiar to you, And there are actually two versions of the film, one that came out in 1960, one that came out in 2001. I do have a special place in my heart for the 2001 version, with gangly Matthew Lillard and dorky little Tony Shalhoub. I find it so fun. It's fairly awful, and the storyline is super lame, but for whatever reason, it just makes me happy. Maybe it's the truck spraying blood in the beginning that hooks me. But I didn't know until I researched this episode that it's a remake of the 1960 film, which has the same title. So for the spoiling this week on As Told by Caroline, I am going to go old school and check that one out for you. Let's find out who the 13th ghost will be in that version. If you would like to join me for the after show each week, you should visit patreon.com/creeptastic and check out all the options you have to get some bonus content. How much you get depends on the price tier you are comfortable with. But there are hours of entertainment there just waiting for you, so don't be shy. You can also link to my Patreon page from my website, creeptastic.com. I could not skip over, in any good conscience, all the Friday the 13th movies, the first of which came out in 1980, and they just keep coming. It's easy to do, because you don't even need the same actor, dude's in a mask. Because I knew I was recording this episode today, last night I got a little nostalgic and decided I was going to watch the original Friday the 13th, because I haven't in a super long time, and I'd forgotten a lot of little bits. It was adorable to me, if I'm being totally honest, some of the fight scenes, particularly the fight scene between Alice and Mrs. Voorhees on the beach. They're rolling around in sand, and Voorhees is punching, and Alice is trying to push and everything, and it is just so painfully obvious that neither of them is remotely trying to actually hurt the other. They are just punching air, barely touching the sand. It's just adorable. But obviously, that entire film franchise has greatly benefited from millions of people having such a superstition about Friday the 13th, because it instantly conveys with the title that bad shit is gonna go down. In 2006, a Filipino horror anthology film called Shake, Rattle, and Roll 8, because there were seven before it, features three mini-stories, the first of which is called 13th Floor. Many years ago, a fire destroyed an orphanage and all the orphans in it, and their souls are trapped on the 13th floor. Unfortunately, that's where a bunch of folks with ties to the fire decide to throw a birthday party. Shenanigans will ensue. I'm hoping I can find that one. As someone who is half Filipino, it was exciting to me to see some Filipino horror make it into the mix. From 2009 to 2014, there was a television show called Warehouse 13, which was described as part X-Files, part Raiders of the Lost Ark, and part Moonlighting, and is also said to have borrowed a lot from the American-Canadian horror series Friday the 13th, which ran from 1987 to 1990. Warehouse 13 follows a team of field agents who retrieve artifacts that have been charged with energy that can give them dangerous powers if misused. Once retrieved and neutralized, the objects are stored in Warehouse 13, the latest in a line of storehouses with infinite capacity that have served this purpose for millennia. And the last film that I wanted to mention is an Indian film, originally titled Yavaram Nalam, but is more commonly known in English as 13B. This came out in 2009. It is in Tamil, which is an Indian language, and it is a horror film. We have lead character Manohar, who moves into a new apartment, apartment 13B, on the 13th floor, with his family. But things immediately start taking a dark turn when his family gets hooked on a TV show, which airs only in their apartment, and seems to reflect all the things that happen to the family, especially bad things. Then Manohar unravels a terrifying secret. The apartment they live in shared their address with a house where a family of eight, just like Manohar's family, was butchered back in 1977. Will the same happen to his family? I don't know, but I'm really hoping I can find this film so I can find out. And so we have made it to the end, my devious darlings. It is time to sum up some takeaways for you so I can get to story time. If it wasn't already obvious to you, I'm not a superstitious person. I consider myself to be a creature of the rational and the logical, and while I am fascinated by shit like the superstitions people allow themselves to believe, I just can't get behind them. They make no sense to me. But if you, dear listener, feel that having one or more superstitions is a good thing in your life, by all means, do you. But if you're so superstitious about something that it's negatively affecting your life or normal daily functions, you may want to consider figuring that out in a therapy session or something. I say that because I think we should all have the happiest lives we can have. So if a superstition is really making you feel better, cool. But if it isn't, and you're skipping the 13th step of every staircase like Stephen King, I don't know, might be worth some self-reflection. Absolutely nothing I have learned so far about the number 13 causes me to believe that it is either lucky or unlucky. It's just a number. And a frequently occurring one because it's so small. It's literally everywhere, and if you really want to find it, you will. If you only want to conveniently see the bad shit related to 13 and none of the good or neutral shit related to it, you might want to consider opening your field of view just a little bit more. And finally, if we are ever going to be free of this particular superstition, I really think we need to knock off the whole skip the 13th floor thing. It is way too widespread, and it just keeps reinforcing for everyone who notices it that there's got to be a legitimate reason for that skip, when there isn't. Unless you count the business assumption, which is that the superstition of customers will mean less money if you do have a 13th floor in your hotel, for example. But as a fan of the rational, I kind of want people to get over their stupid shit. And to me, superstitions like thinking the number 13 is going to bring you bad luck? Sorry, but that qualifies. And with that, it is story time. Today, I am bringing you an old Italian fairy tale called 13th, which was translated from the Italian into English by Thomas Frederick Crane in 1885 in his book, Italian Popular Tales. Enjoy. There once was a father who had 13 sons, the youngest of whom was named 13th. The father had hard work to support his children, but made what he could gathering herbs. The mother, to make the children quick, said to them, "The one who comes home first shall have herb soup." 13th always returned first, and the soup always fell to his share. On which account, his brothers hated him and sought to get rid of him. The king issued a proclamation in the city that he who was bold enough to go and steal the ogre's coverlet should receive a measure of gold. The brothers of 13th went to the king and said, "Majesty, we have a brother named 13th who is confident that he can do that and other things too." The king said, "Bring him to me at once." They brought 13th, who said, "Majesty, how is it possible to steal the ogre's coverlet? If he sees me, he will eat me." "No matter, you must go," said the king. "I know that you are bold, and this act of bravery you must perform." 13th departed and went to the house of the ogre, who was away. The ogress was in the kitchen. 13th entered quietly and hid himself under the bed. At night, the ogre returned. He ate his supper and went to bed, saying as he did so, "I smell the smell of human flesh. Where I see it, I will swallow it." The ogress replied, "Be still, no one has entered here." The ogre began to snore, and 13th pulled the coverlet a little. The ogre awoke and cried, "What is that?" 13th began to mew like a cat. The ogress said, "Scat, scat," and clapped her hands, and then fell asleep again with the ogre. Then 13th gave a hard pull, seized the coverlet, and ran away. The ogre heard him running, recognized him in the dark, and said, "I know you. You are 13th, without doubt." After a time, the king issued another proclamation that whoever would steal the ogre's horse and bring it to the king should receive a measure of gold. 13th again presented himself and asked for a silk ladder and a bag of cakes. With these things he departed and went at night to the ogre's, climbed up without being heard, and descended to the stable. The horse neighed on seeing him, but he offered it a cake, saying, "Do you see how sweet it is? If you will come with me, my master will give you these always." Then he gave it another, saying, "Let me mount you and see how we go." So he mounted it, kept feeding it with cakes, and brought it to the king's stable. The king issued another proclamation that he would give a measure of gold to whoever would bring him the ogre's bolster. 13th said, "Majesty, how is that possible? The bolster is full of little bells, and you must know that the ogre awakens at a breath."
"I know nothing about it," said the king. "I wish it at any cost."
13th departed and went and crept under the ogre's bed. At midnight, he stretched out his hand very softly, but the little bells all sounded.
"What is that?"
"Nothing," replied the ogress. "Perhaps it is the wind that makes them ring."
But the ogre, who was suspicious, pretended to sleep, but kept his ears open. 13th stretched out his hand again. The ogre put out his arm and seized him.
"Now you are caught. Just wait, I will make you cry for your first trick, for your second, and for your third."
After this, he put 13th in a barrel and began to feed him on raisins and figs. After a time, he said,
"Stick out your finger, little 13th, so that I can see whether you are fat."
13th saw there a mouse's tail and stuck that out.
"How thin you are," said the ogre. "And besides, you don't smell good. Eat, my son. Take the raisins and figs and get fat soon."
After some days, the ogre told him again to put out his finger, and 13th stuck out a spindle.
"Wretch, are you still lean? Eat, eat, and get fat soon."
At the end of the month, 13th had nothing more to stick out, and was obliged to show his finger. The ogre cried out in joy.
"He is fat, he is fat!"
The ogress hastened to the spot.
"Quickly, my ogress, heat the oven 3 nights and 3 days, for I'm going to invite our relatives, and we will make a fine banquet of 13th.
The ogress heated the oven 3 days and 3 nights, and then released 13th from the barrel, saying to him,
"Come here, 13th, we have got to put the lamb in the oven."
But 13th caught her meaning, and when he approached the oven, he said, "Mother ogress, what is that black thing in the corner of the oven?" The ogress stooped down a little, but saw nothing. "Stoop down again," said 13th, "so that you can see it." When she stooped down again, 13th seized her by the feet and threw her into the oven, and then closed the oven door. When she was cooked, he took her out carefully, cut her in two, divided her legs into pieces, and put them on the table. He placed her trunk with her head and arms in the bed under the sheet, and tied a string to the chin and another to the back of her head. When the ogre arrived with his guests, he found the dishes on the table. Then he went to his wife's bed and asked,
"Mother ogress, do you want to dine?"
13th pulled the string, and the ogress shook her head.
"How are you, tired?"
And 13th, who was hidden under the bed, pulled the other string and made her nod. Now it happened that one of her relatives moved something and saw that the ogress was dead, and only half of her was there. She cried in a loud voice, "Treason! Treason!" and all hastened to the bed. In the midst of the confusion, 13th escaped from under the bed and ran away to the king with the bolster and the ogre's most valuable things. After this, the king said to 13th, "Listen, 13th, to complete your valiant exploits, I wish you to bring me the ogre himself, in person, alive and well."
"How can I, your majesty?" said 13th.
Then he roused himself and added,
"I see how now."
Then he had a very strong chest made and disguised himself as a monk with a long false beard and went to the ogre's house, calling out to him,
Do you know 13th? The wretch. He has killed our superior. But if I catch him, I will shut him up in this chest. At these words, the ogre drew near and said, I too would like to help you against that wretch of an assassin, for you don't know what he has done to me. And he began to tell his story. But what shall we do? Said the pretended monk. I do not know 13th. Do you know him?
Yes, sir.
Then tell me, Father Ogre, how tall is he?
As tall as I am.
If that is so, said 13th, let us see whether this chest will hold you. If it will hold you, it will hold him.
Good,
said the ogre, and got into the chest. Then 13th shut the chest and said, Look carefully, Father Ogre, and see whether there is any hole in the chest.
There is none.
Just wait. Let us see whether it shuts well and is heavy to carry. Meanwhile, 13th shut and nailed up the chest, took it on his back, and hastened to the city. When the ogre cried, Enough now! 13th ran all the faster, and, laughing, sang this song to taunt the ogre. I am 13th, who carry you on my back. I have tricked you and am going to trick you. I must deliver you to the king. When he reached the king had an iron chain attached to the ogre's hands and feet and made him gnaw bones the rest of his miserable life. The king gave 13th all the riches and treasures he could bestow on him and always wished him at his side as a man of the highest valor. The end. That's it for this episode of Creeptastic. Thank you so very, very, very much for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, I would very much welcome a review from you literally anywhere that you listen to this. Or you can also head over to my Patreon page, patreon.com/creeptastic, and subscribe to get some bonus content. That includes the weekly after show, as told by Caroline. It can also include monthly bonus episodes if you're into that. To find all the links to my Patreon page and all my social media pages, including Instagram, where I post any and all accompanying visuals for episodes, please visit the Creeptastic website at creeptastic.com. And if you would like to talk to me, I would absolutely love to hear from you. I've heard from a couple of new folks this week, and that's been very exciting for me. If I knew who they were, I would have them attest to the fact that I did write back, and I usually write back in some length. So feel free to let me know your thoughts on this or any episode you've heard. I also welcome topic ideas or things like that. You can email me at caroline@creeptastic.com or on social media. The website is creeptastic.com. I am Caroline. You are a wonderful and awesome listener who I really hope has a great week and I really hope continues to be your creeptastic self.